You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for our main event this evening. A main event anytime he appears on the program with us. It is, of course, time to bring Jared Taylor back to the broadcast as we continue our coverage of Memphis. But Jared will be touching on that quite briefly, but also how he broke the sound barrier at Arizona State University in a very noteworthy and newsworthy talk there on campus. Jared, as you know, is the editor of American Renaissance and the author of Paved with Good Intentions, White Identity, and If We Do Nothing. He is traveling this evening and has still found the time to work us in, and for that we're quite appreciative. Jared, how are you?
I'm very well, and it's always a pleasure and honor to be on your program, James.
Well, I appreciate that, my friend. And, of course, we had talked with you about coming on last week. You had spoken at Arizona State University and were actually in transit, in flight, in air, during our broadcast last Saturday night. So we pushed it to this week, and it's still quite timely, of course. But little did we know over the course of the last 7 days that the bottom would drop out here in the city to which I belong, the city that I was born in, the city that I was raised in, the city that I fell in love in and got married in and had children in and started my program in and put on conferences in. And, of course, you've been here to speak
yes.
At least one of those events. And so this is Memphis, and I know you've been following this, and we're not going to ask you to go into the details of it, but when you see something like this, what's your reaction, Jared? And what would you say to the residents of Memphis who are tuned in tonight?
Golly. Well, James, it must be so painful to you personally to see this happening in your city. I mean, you know why it's happening. You know the causes. But even so, it is so grievously painful. And I will never forget admiring that beautiful, beautiful statue of Nathan Bedford Forrest, and then later learning, I did that in your company, and then later learning
yes, you did.
That those crooked city fathers had spirited it away. Just to see your own city, I didn't realize you'd been born in Memphis. I know you'd lived there for all that time. But yep. to see it just becoming a hive of degeneracy and black criminality, one thing that I do hope, I mean, this pattern that you've had, this poor heiress, and then this black guy who goes on the rampage, running around shooting people, streaming them live on Facebook, for heaven's sake, I just hope that more and more people, even if they think they are liberals, cannot help but put two and two together and finally arrive at four, that this is a terrible problem. We have to speak straightforwardly about the problem of black crime, not just in Memphis, but in the entire country.
Okay, Jared, I'm going to not carry this over more than one segment with you because you were brought on to talk about your speech, and I certainly want to get to that, but we'll let's just spend this segment on that because I think what you touched on
yes.
And that will still afford plenty of time for Arizona State, which I absolutely want to get to. But I think you just touched on something. You cannot correct the problem until you identify it and until you have
yes.
adult conversations about it. Now, we mentioned this in the last hour. The Memphis of 1922, the Memphis of 1952, this would have never happened. And what changed? And the demography changed. The demographics changed. Memphis went to from a 20% black city to a 70% black city. And yep. nobody's mentioning this. And we pointed out the absurdity in the last hour. Of course, on the very unusual occasions where you have a Dylann Roof, the only thing that matters in those situations is the race of the perpetrator, the race of the victims. And when covering this story, you know what the Memphis Police Department, how they described it to Jared? I've closed my notes on this, but it said that youths were targeting community members.
Yes, that's right. That's where the
teens were targeting community members. And if you do point out race, people would say, well, whites do this too. Whites commit crime. Whites are bad.
Yeah.
You've got the stats to that, though, don't you?
Well, gosh, yes. Show us the examples, for heaven's sake. And yes, there are whites who kill people. There are whites who mug people. But they do not do it. There is a qualitative difference in the kind of crimes that whites commit. This notion of lying in wait for this young jogger, spiriting her away and killing her, I can't think of a single example of a white person doing that. Not one. Not one. Maybe it's happened somewhere, sometime in the United States. But this also, this sort of random, just run around and shoot anybody in sight to the way this guy's done. No, this is an outrage. And I was very impressed that even Tucker Carlson, in one of his monologues, probably you've talked about that.
We're
going to
be talking about that next
race.
Hour, actually.
Oh, I see. Well, I probably shouldn't get into it. But
No. By all means, foreshadow it. He didn't mention it, but everybody knew what he was talking about.
You know, that's the thing. Everyone is saying, well, Tucker Carlson, he's on the ball. You know, we have to make the implicit explicit. He's saying 100 years ago, Memphis was this wonderful, wonderful place, wonderful parks, peaceful, up and coming, optimistic. And look at it now. The people who lived there at that time would never recognize the place. What's changed? He doesn't say it.
Jared, this is the question. No, he doesn't say it, but I'm wondering. Now, I take for granted that anybody watching that knows exactly what he's saying, but is it true that they all do? I wonder.
Well, that's what we don't know. And I think we've got to come right out and say the problem is black people. We don't have a gun problem in this country. We have a problem with black people shooting us and each other. And until the country is prepared to say, look, it is a black problem, a race problem, then we cannot solve it. But white people are such cowards, and I use that word advisedly. They are such pathetic cowards. They don't dare say something that we all know. I think even the liberals know that. Look at where they live. Look at where they send their children to school. They lock their doors if they take the wrong exit off the highway and they find themselves in the black quarter. No, everybody knows it, and nobody dares say it. And that is not a way you can run any kind of a country.
It is not, and absolutely. Order is one of the cornerstones of a civilization. There is no order in these communities. I think you had, and I believe it was you, and I may be paraphrasing here, and it's something that I've used many times in interviews, and I hijacked it from you, I stole it from you, but I believe you said something along the lines of, the history of race relations can be summed up in one word, and that word is conflict. What is the reality, Jared? And this will be the last question before we go to break and then come back with your talk in Arizona last week. But what is the reality of diverse communities, so-called diverse communities and societies? What is that reality?
See, this is, once again, an astonishing thing. All you need to do is open your eyes, and you can see that diversity of the very kind we're supposed to be celebrating is a source of constant tension, even violence. It is a problem in every possible manifestation. And then we're supposed to turn right around and say, not only is diversity a strength, it's America's greatest strength. I mean, this is some sort of form of self-imposed insanity. Do people believe that? We're just supposed to pretend we believe it.
Yeah, well, I ask that. I ask that question often. I mean, this is a game of the emperor has no clothes, but how many people really believe it? How many people are just going along so they don't get picked on in their social circles? I don't know, but I'll tell you what, the reality still exists no matter who uses the ostrich defense. We'll be back. Thanks, Jared, for playing along with that. We're going to Arizona State next. Antelope Hill Publishing is America's leading publisher of dissident books, bringing you a wide variety of new translations and original works on every subject from the Spanish Civil War to the funding behind the transgender movement. Antelope Hill publishes books that mainstream publishers won't touch, full of information that challenges the political status quo and brings real culture to the reading public at an affordable price. If you count yourself as a political dissident, you owe it to yourself to check out the Antelope Hill catalog with exclusive offerings like Solzhenitsyn and the Right, The Open Society Playbook, Opioids for the Masses, and many more. There's something there for everyone, and new titles are added every month. Check out the catalog today at antelopehillpublishing.com. That's AntelopeHillPublishing.com. I'm James Edwards, and I want you to go to AntelopeHillPublishing.com.
Do you treasure your liberty? Well, at LovingLiberty.net, we most certainly do. And we want to help protect your liberty, too. Become part of the family. Everyone knows that the core of any society is the family. Therefore, the government should foster and protect the integrity of its family, we the people. Won't you join us as a Loving Liberty sponsor to help us promote the principles in the 5,000-year leap? Let's restore the miracle that changed the world at LovingLiberty.net.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com.
Back with the great and good Jared Taylor, the esteemed Jared Taylor. You know him as the editor of American Renaissance, Amren.com. I'm there every day. You should be, too. People who know Jared and know his story knows that he is a graduate of Yale, an Ivy Leaguer. But he was a Sun Devil last week, and it was at Arizona State University where he broke the sound barrier in a great and rollicking article he wrote for Amren.com. He talked about breaking the sound barrier. Clever play on words. What did you mean by it, Jared?
What I meant by that is that for the first time in 10 years, I actually was able to deliver a speech on a college campus. There have been several invitations, but they are invariably quashed by spineless administrations who submit to pressure and say, we can't guarantee safety. No, we can't do that. But Arizona State University was the perfect combination of a determined student group. It's called College Republicans United. And also, the administration actually stood up for free speech. I was not at all convinced that this was going to go through because I've seen half a dozen talks in the last 10 years fall through. But the administration said it's going to happen. And of course, the campus lefties were just screeching their heads off, put up posters around campus with cute little images of Ku Klux Klansmen. I was sorry I couldn't find one to put in my scrapbook. And they tried to get hundreds of people to call the administration, flood the phone lines with protest. And then they claimed to have 100 people out protesting my talk. Now, I never saw them because the police slipped me in very discreetly through a back door on the other side of the building. But just before the talk began, I could hear them roaring clear on the other side of the building. Oh, they were having a fine old time protesting fascism. That's their favorite thing to protest. Yeah. And I gave a great, rousing, two-fisted talk about the kinds of things that you and I love to talk about, need to be talked about. And at the end of it, the police, it must have been an escort of at least a dozen police officers, took me to a waiting car, and I was whisked away. And it was all absolutely perfect and left the lefties apoplectic. Oh, it's so much fun to read their kind of after-action reports about, God, we couldn't do it. You know, we screamed. We thought that the administration was going to cave in. But, oh, my God, they're just tearing their hair out in agony. So I consider it a wonderful, wonderful success. And this outfit, College Republicans United, I had never heard of the group before I got their invitation, but they are on several dozen campuses. And I think they have a very clever name.
Interesting.
They
very
kind of fly
interesting.
Under the, yes. They fly under the radar because people think they're just Republicans, but they have nothing to do with the Republican Party. And I think part of the genius of the name is that they force the college Republicans to get on the side with the worst possible lefties in denouncing white supremacy and white privilege and structural racism. They sound absolutely like the Black Student Union. And as far as what really matters, they are no different anyway. So that is one of the great achievements of this College Republicans United, and the way they make the ordinary Republicans look like the pathetic, weak, spineless sisters that they really are.
So you've just given a broad flyover, a broad overview of what took place there, and now we are going to go into some details. And that was actually one question I had for you in advance of reading your report, which sort of gave some clarification on the matter. But your host group is not officially tied to the Student Republican Club or the official Student Republican Club at Arizona State University, which went out of their way to denounce this particular group that uses the Republican name.
That's exactly right. And that is one of the things they love to do. They love to show up these limp-wristed so-called Republicans who really want respectability more than anything else, and who, as far as all the big questions are concerned, they've already gone over to the other side. And so, yes, they put out this statement saying that there is no place on our campus for evil doctrines of white supremacy, blah, blah, blah. Well, they sounded, as I say, just like Black Lives Matter rioters.
But you know what, Jared, about that, about Republican clubs like this and Republican milquetoast Republicans like this, they're really getting left behind from the Republican base. You've done studies about it.
Yes.
We've talked exhaustively about the trends within the Republican base. And for goodness sake, as you say, even Blake Masters, what is it, the Republican nominee for senator out in Arizona, said exactly the same thing you said last segment. We don't have a problem with gun violence. We have a problem with black violence. That's the Republican nominee for senator in Arizona. So what is this campus Republican club thinking? I mean, they're the ones looking a fool now. They're the ones that are out of touch with the mainstream and the GOP base, and even with their own nominee.
That's exactly right. And that is one of the auxiliary purposes of College Republicans United, to show what these so-called Republicans, well, I guess they really are some form of Republican, but just show how toothless, how gutless, and how pointless they all are. And as a result, some of the people who are in the so-called Republican, the campus Republican groups, end up coming to the College Republicans United, because that's where they see where the real guts, the real ideas, the real willingness to stand up the left actually is. Yeah, I think it's a brilliant tactic.
Okay. Yeah, no, it is. It is. It absolutely is. But let's go back to this. Some details, some behind-the-scenes stuff that you didn't write about, just for this particular listening audience. So you got the invitation. What did the invitation read? And I know you thought that there may be, and quite rightly so, would be some hurdles and that the administration at Arizona State University may cave. But it all started with a request for you to come speak.
That's right.
Give a speech. That's what did the request read?
Well, it was right at the Contact Us tab on our own website. They just came in over the transom, and they said, we'd like to arrange for Jared Taylor to give a talk on campus. And as I say, I'd never heard of the group, and so I got the name of the fella and his phone number. I was very skeptical, so I insisted on talking to him before we made any kind of plans at all. And he turned out to be a very on-the-ball, solid guy with a realistic understanding of what the problems were likely to be. And he had already been working with the administration and with the security people. He says, look, I know the security people here. They had had an event before with Vincent James. It did not get the same kind of publicity, but it got a similar kind of opposition. And the campus had held firm. The security was very good. Vincent James gave his talk. It went off absolutely smoothly. And so he had this event under his belt. He says, we got it figured out. It's going to work. And I said, well, okay, as long as you pay for the ticket, then I'll come down. I mean, I was afraid that if we were going to buy a ticket, I was very much afraid I might get down there or buy a ticket. And then, the administration says, no, this is just too dangerous. But no, the president himself issued some sort of statement saying that we believe in a robust exchange of ideas. Can you believe that? A college president?
Well, no, I don't. It is hard to believe. It is hard to believe.
Yeah.
And I don't want to cast shade at an erstwhile ally and someone that was, you know, a friend. But after Richard Spencer's college tour and how they were able to pretty much work around any limitations in their views that a public university may have about having to accommodate everyone and so on and so forth. Was it a little surprising to you at this point in the game? Because there was a point in time where American Renaissance could rent a hotel and have a conference. Right. And the left and our oppositions have become adept and adapted to ways to shut us down. After all of that, over the course of the last 10 years, the ones that have fell apart, what we saw other people doing and how they were able to block them in a de facto type way, this had to be a very pleasant surprise for you.
It was a very pleasant surprise. And apparently they have very strong chapters in a number of different universities who are determined to have me out too. So I very much look forward to similar talks on different campuses. And the more this can happen, absolutely the better. And as I say, when you read what the Twitter exchanges are on the lefties who completely failed, they're so angry, they're so bitter, they just don't understand it. They're so used to getting their way. They are just such crybabies and such whiners. Oh, I love seeing their chagrin. And you got a room full of people who have never heard some of these ideas before. I think that's what's so important, is going on college campuses, because they are the most conformist, censored places in the entire United States. The whole country is conformist and censored, but nothing like college campuses.
So I thought this was very significant.
Yeah.
Well, you got to read the article, folks. And by the way, if you're listening live or if you're listening to this in the archive, it doesn't matter. Go to my Twitter account at James Edwards TPC. I just posted a link to this article at amren.com, Breaking the Sound Barrier on Campus. Jared gives you the details. We're going to get more details. What did he actually say in his speech? We haven't even talked about that yet. We're going to get to it next.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Kenneth Burns.
Charles III officially proclaimed King of Britain. He spent 7 decades as the heir apparent, officially becoming king when his mother, Queen Elizabeth II, died on Thursday. His Majesty paid tribute to her in a speech.
My mother's reign was unequaled in its duration, its dedication, and its devotion. Even as we grieve, we give thanks for this most faithful life.
Charles's eldest son, Prince William, now the heir apparent to the throne. He and his wife, Princess Kate, assumed the titles of Prince and Princess of Wales. In a short statement posted to Instagram, William said, "While the world lost the leader, he has lost the grandmother," adding that he will honor his grandmother's memory by supporting his father in every way he can. The Royal Palace says the funeral for Queen Elizabeth will take place on Monday, September 19th at Westminster Abbey. The Kremlin says it's pulling back troops from two areas in Ukraine's Kharkiv region, where Ukrainian counteroffensive has made great strides in the past week. The news comes days after apparent advances by Ukraine in what's considered the biggest battlefield success for them since they thwarted a Russian attempt to seize the capital Kyiv at the start of the war nearly 7 months ago. UAW members are on strike at the Stellantis casting plant in Kokomo, Indiana. They're concerned about health and safety, including the company's alleged refusal to repair and replace the plant's HVAC system. The 35-acre facility makes parts that are used in the powertrains of Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Ram vehicles. 5 people in New Zealand are dead after the small boat they chartered capsized in what authorities believe may have been a collision with a whale. 6 other people aboard were rescued. They were in stable condition at a local health center. A police spokesman says the bodies of the deceased have been recovered. The accident is under investigation. You are listening to USA Radio News.
Diabetes, high blood pressure, anxiety meds, everyone's on them. If you're a 50-year-old male, maybe a bit porky, and you may even have type 2 diabetes, $1 million of term insurance may only cost you about $200 a month. Call Term Provider. Speak with Big Lou at 800-568-2790. Big Lou will find a term life policy for you even if you have type 2 diabetes, are overweight, or have high blood pressure. Term Provider has helped thousands of people like you who think they can't afford term life insurance. insurance. To buy $1 million of affordable term life for you, all you need to do is call Big Lou at 800-568-2790. Lou will make sure the scales are tipped in your favor. Call 800-568-2790. Big Lou will answer your call and work to fit you into a term life policy that you can afford. Remember, Big Lou's like you. He's on meds too. Call 800-568-2790. 800-568-2790.
We have but one fleeting segment remaining with our mainstay guest, and he has truly been a pillar of everything this broadcast has stood for. Well, that's why he's the most interviewed guest that's ever been on this program. Jared Taylor, and a longtime friend, and just an all-around great guy. Now, he was at Arizona State University last week, and he wasn't out in the cow pasture or anything like that. He was right in the middle of the university. And we're going to talk this segment. We're going to have to make haste, but we're going to talk in this segment about the police presence there and the situations at universities at large here in the current year. But first, let's get down to the brass tacks, Jared. You're brought to university to deliver a speech. There's opposition. There's news. And again, folks, you can read all about this at amren.com, but we got the man himself telling us about it. What was the message of your presentation?
It was basically an introduction to white racial consciousness. And I started with the biological reality of race. This is another one of these just utterly astonishing phenomena in the United States today that we're supposed to pretend that the racial differences between, say, an Australian Aborigine and a Japanese are some kind of sociological optical illusion, that it's not biology, that race was invented by racist 17th century white people as an excuse to oppress each other, oppress people who didn't look like them. As if, you know, when, say, the first Japanese saw the Europeans coming out of those boats, they thought, oh, they look just like us. Hey, that guy looks like Uncle Tanaka. No, they thought, what in heaven's name is this? What are these bizarre creatures? We know exactly what they thought because they wrote about it. And they did these woodblock prints that depicted this astonishing differences between them and the Europeans. The idea that it's some sort of social construct, as I say, it is so wrong and so stupid that only very intelligent people could possibly persuade themselves that it's true. So the reality of biological race, that the races are different, and the races consistently, wherever you find them, build civilizations and societies that are different. That white people build a particular kind of society, and if we want that society to continue into the future, we have to have places that are our own. And I said that as far as white advocacy is concerned, we can get an indication of the solution to the terrible problems America has racially just by counting up the number of the ethnic and racial identity groups right there on the campus. I had gone on their website, and I found 70 different groups, Hispanic groups, black groups, Asian groups,
Jared, hold on a minute. Are you sure you're at the Arizona State University website or the Southern Baptist Convention website? Because they have the breakaway groups for all of these other ethnicities and races as well. But by God, you better not mention the one that actually sits in the pews.
Whew. No, and Arizona State University, it brags about how diverse the campus is. Well, nobody's enjoying diversity. They're all off in their little cubbyholes, being with the people just like themselves. I said, what does that tell you? The solution is to let people go their own way. And if our civilization is going to have any kind of future in the United States, we've got to have a part of it that is ours and is ours forever. So as you can imagine, that was a rather surprising message to take to an American college campus today, and people listened with considerable attention. I thought, as I say, it was a great accomplishment to have gotten that message through into an environment where you almost never hear good sense on the subject of race.
Well, it's a major American university. I mean, Arizona State University isn't some small community college in a town you've never heard of. I mean, this is a prestigious venue. And so I was actually talking with Kevin McDonald last week on this program about the psychology of self-hating whites. And I asked him the question of what inoculates people like you and him and me from what has afflicted so many of our kinsmen. And that's a topic for a whole other conversation. But how was your message received? Yeah. This was, I guess, sort of race realism 101 here at this college campus. Yes. But how was it received amongst the people who were coming to listen in good faith?
Well, there were people who were supporters. I was surprised at the number of people who'd driven all the way in from, say, California or Utah. So there were a good number of supporters. But the people who were in the audience, who were from the community, there were some black students there. They asked polite questions. I'd made the point about the fundamental necessity to talk about racial differences in IQ, racial differences in ability, because otherwise their failures are blamed on us. And they asked polite questions. Nobody was shrieking. I guess the people who would have shrieked were outside doing the shrieking. But no, it was well received. I think, as I say, this was something. These were ideas that probably half the audience had never heard before, and it was a wonderful opportunity to spread the message to people who never hear it. Now, to me, if I were an objective observer of what was happening, and I didn't even attend the talk, what I would want to see is videos, and there were many videos of the demonstrators out there shouting obscenities, looking fat, sick, just misfits of all kinds, almost all white, making fools of themselves, screaming about fascism, as opposed to a guy dressed in a jacket and tie saying sensible things. The image should have been very clear. Now, the question I have is, if there hadn't been 20 police officers there, what would have the consequences been? I suspect for sure that they would have walked in and they would have made so much of a racket that it would have been impossible to hear me.
Now, that's a best case scenario.
Best case scenario. Would they have tried to attack me physically? I don't know. But as I say, thanks to the very professional and courteous work of the campus police officers, there was never any chance of any of that happening. So I say hats off to the university and hats off to the campus police. They did a wonderful job.
Well, you know, it's always the practitioners and the advocates of tolerance and diversity that have no tolerance for the diversity of opinion. And this came at your appearance came at a substantial price tag to law enforcement personnel because of these people, of the truly intolerant people in our communities and society.
That is exactly right. The rumor was that the campus paid $45,000 to protect me. And I would not.
Well, worth every penny. I tell you that. Worth every penny.
Well, thank you. Thank you, James. I think it's worth it. But
you've seen this in Ameren, too, though. You've seen this in Ameren, too. I mean, Ameren, the state of Tennessee, has had to send mounted cavalry to protect thoughtful attendees of a scholarly conference from the threats of violence that are not coming from white advocates, but from the opposition to freedom of speech and assembly.
And that is the lesson that thoughtful people should draw. Whatever they think about what I might have said, whatever they think about the content of race realism, they should think to themselves, wait a minute, how come it cost the taxpayers of the state of Arizona $45,000 to keep the peace when some guy comes on campus to give a talk? And who are the people who are the threat? Who are the people who are potentially violent? Who are the people who are shouting obscenities, including obscenities at the university for permitting this to happen? Who are the bad guys here? I think it is very, very clear. And I hope a lot of people drew that correct lesson.
Well, Jared provides you with photo documentation of this. And I know, Jared, just as you and I were walking around Trump's inauguration and kind of taking the whole scene in and taking pictures, you know, it was amazing that we didn't get hurt that day because there was a lot of violence going on in the streets of Washington, D.C.
within a
block or two of where we were at any given moment that day. But you took some pictures of your time at Arizona State University last week at the barricades, the barriers, and all of the security structures that were put up. And it's worth a read, folks. It's on our Twitter. You can go to Amarin.com and check it out as well, how Jared broke the sound barrier. And, Jared, I hope it's not another decade before you're back on a college campus, because colleges and universities need to hear this message. And with seconds remaining, the ideas of universities as a place of education and learning and the relentless search of truths, is that real?
Well, university comes from the word universal. Everything goes. Everything is supposed to go. Everything under the sun is supposed to be studied and debated. Not so anymore. But I think that it's not going to be 10 years before I speak next, because this organization, as I say, it's a new organization, Campus Republicans United. If any of your listeners are students on a college campus, see if there is a chapter on your campus. And as I say, there are already several that are very eager to have me out. So I'm hoping that this is the first of many successful appearances and many crushing defeats for the antis.
Wonderful report, Jared. I am glad that you were able to come on and give us at least two segments of encouraging news on a week that has been far too tragic here in Memphis, where we are broadcasting tonight. We appreciate you. We are thankful for you. Continue your night with your host and your company there out of town, and we will talk to you again soon, my friend. Thank you again.
I'm Michael Hill, president of the League of the South. I and my compatriots are Southern nationalists. We seek the survival, well-being, and independence of the Southern people, our people. The League wants a South that enjoys the sweet fruits of Christian liberty and prosperity, but our current situation won't allow it. We must have our independence from Washington, D.C., and the globalists. The present system cannot be reformed. Without independence, we will continue down this path of destruction. To us, this is not acceptable. I'm asking you, Southern man and woman, to join us today to free the South. Call us at 256-757-6789 or see our website at www.leagueofthesouth.com. God save the South.
Why does the left lie constantly? Because they get spiritual power from lying. The lies come from Satan, the father of lies. John 8:44. Here's how the political lying process works. Satan provides the beast with a lie. Then the more they use the lie, the more spiritual power they get. Look, the media is a lie multiplier, and this multiplication gives more evil spiritual power to the beast. And that can overwhelm and even deceive the body of Christ, especially when the body is being disobedient to the head. The churches today are incorporated, so they're subordinate to human government. They obey the beast and do nothing to restore our national relationship with God. And the government shall be on his shoulders, Isaiah 9:6. That verse is not for the present-day church. Rather, it is for the end-time church, the body of the line of Judah. A message from Christ Kingdom Ministries.
Boy, don't we hope so. That's for sure. That's Charlie Daniels. The South's going to do it again. Played by request tonight from our listener and supporter, Ralph, in Arkansas. Ralph wrote a whole month ago. Sorry, Ralph, it took us so long to get to it. But back on August the 10th, Ralph wrote, "Dear James and Keith, I want to commend you for your great work that you both do at TPC. Sometimes I get down and angry at what's happening to our kinsmen worldwide, and I feel that all is lost. But when I listen to you on Saturday nights, I feel inspired, and I have hope. May God continue to bless your work. I have a song request. Can you play on one of your show segments, Charlie Daniels' The South's Gonna Do It Again, if you could, please? I think your listeners would enjoy it. Thank you for all you do, Ralph from Arkansas. Well, Ralph, thank you for all you do and your listenership and your support. We do appreciate it. And there, my friend, after a month, we did get to it, and we do hope the South is going to do it again. And I'm so happy that you are encouraged by the work here at TPC. So, too, is Laura. Laura in Georgia, who just sent in a contribution. And don't forget, ladies and gentlemen, that our third quarter fundraising drive is now officially underway. We're 10 days into it, in fact, and we need a little pick-me-up. We can only accept contributions, check, money order, well-conceived, yes, and concealed cash through the USPS. And you can get the information at our website. If you're a regular donor, perhaps you received in the mail quite recently a newsletter with a return envelope in it for your remittances. But Laura in Georgia, who tunes in and is a supporter, wrote, "This is me on Saturday because it's TPC day." Yes, we do broadcast live on Saturdays. This is the video she sent to me. She said this is how she feels every Saturday.
"You don't have to go to school today. But today's Saturday.
Huh? It's Saturday. Oh, it's Saturday. Oh, it's Saturday. Hi, nine, honey, and a hot cha-cha. Oh, it's
So that's from the Little Rascals, of course. And it is Saturday, and we're great. We're happy to be with you here this Saturday evening. So a quick recap on what we've done so far tonight. Keith Alexander and yours truly broke down the situation of Memphis for the first hour. Jared Taylor touched on it at the beginning of this hour before we segued into his appearance at Arizona State University, which you just heard. In the next hour, don't go anywhere yet, ladies and gentlemen, because Tim Murdoch, the White Rabbit himself, Horace the Avenger, is going to be with us, popular commentator and content creator. He's actually creating content right now, and as soon as he gets off his stream tonight, he's going to be coming over and doing a little cross-promotion with us, or what do you call it? What did somebody call it today? It is a crossover episode. That's what I was looking for. That's what I was stabbing at. Tim Murdoch is going to be doing a crossover episode with us, and I'm a regular guest of his as well. So that's coming up. And we're going to get back on the topic of Memphis. We're going to break down Tucker Carlson's commentary on Memphis and how it sizes up to that of our own. And Tim Murdoch can tell you all about that next. No. Another listener in Arkansas, Phil, wrote, "I agree with you about the need for an ethnostate, but it shouldn't be limited to just the South anymore. I want all red states to secede, including red counties and congressional districts currently held hostage in liberal blue states and their realignment as the greater white heartland of North America." That is a great point, and I agree with you. The Confederacy can always be at the heart of it, but there are other people. There is a whole nation that exists beyond the former boundaries of the Confederacy. And there are good people in it, and we want them to be with us as well in the Mountain West and places like Idaho and all of that. So we agree. What else do I have here? I've got a whole lot here. I want to give a quick tip of the hat to Bob up in Nashville. He wrote me a letter, and this is so many of our listeners share these things with us. Details from their personal lives, what's going on with their families. And I really enjoyed Bob's letter here out of the Nashville area. "Dear James, I recently had my 77th birthday. Time waits on no man, so they say. Looking back at my life, I have few regrets. I was a member of the Nashville chapter of the Citizens Council. At that time, the Citizens Councils were headquartered in Jackson, Mississippi. Now Jackson has a black mayor, a black nationalist mayor. But during those years, I became friends with the late Lambeth Mays. When Lambeth passed away, his brother gave me the records. It should be noted that the Nashville chapter had over 400 members, 400 dedicated white activists in one city alone. You can win with those numbers. We campaigned for Alabama Governor George Wallace. I was elected president of the George Wallace Youth. We sold 22,000 Wallace for President bumper stickers for $1 apiece and donated all of the proceeds to the county Wallace for President organization. Wallace carried, listen to this, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about modern day Nashville. Wallace carried, George Wallace carried Davidson County. That's where Metropolitan Nashville is located in 1968. In 1968, George Wallace won Nashville. I'm enclosing a modest donation, he writes. So to have men like this, men who were fighting with Wallace in the 1960s, they're listening to this show, they're donating to this show. My friend, Bob, that is my honor. It is my honor to welcome you as a listener of this broadcast and all of the other people who have tuned in and written in over these 18 years. This comes from another listener, I believe, in Arkansas. What is going on in Arkansas tonight? Arkansas, big for TPC. The University of Tennessee, Knoxville, is receiving criticism after reporting surfaced that it advanced proposals for partnering with a critical race collective, quote unquote, and is seeking to integrate social justice and anti-racism, which is really just anti-whiteism, into various aspects of the school. Critical race theory is a dangerous agenda that teaches that we are either oppressors or victims, says Senator Marsha Blackburn here out of Tennessee. I've heard bad things about UT for years. UT for years, our listener writes, but the University of Arkansas is not much better. I don't doubt it. I do not doubt it. I am thumbing through mail here. This is, you know, I probably should have opened some of these up first. I got one from Harold in Florida. And Harold, I'm going to give you a little more time when I have it next week. How about that? Here's Kenneth in Indiana with a contribution saying, please keep me on your mailing list. Well, you don't have to ask us twice, Kenneth, for that. We will certainly do that. Really more than we can get to tonight. But this one came in from a listener in Maryland who wrote, loved, 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 in all capital letters with an increasing number of exclamation points, the autographed picture from Dr. Duke. I definitely support his work as well. I pray everyone is safe in your part of the country. That's from Keith in Maryland. Well, thank you, Keith, for that. I'm glad you enjoyed our fundraising incentive last quarter, the second quarter fundraising drive, which was the autographed photo art from David Duke. That was a big hit. I think this quarter's fundraising incentive is also quite intriguing, and we'll hope that you'll give us your consideration for that. So, as I said, our third quarter fundraising drive is underway. And we are about a third of the way through it. And if you want to hear good news, if you want to hear good news, we would hope that you would donate $100 or more to this quarter and its fundraising drive. And you're going to receive a DVD copy that you can only get here. It's a DVD video. It is a TPC double feature. And we had these made up. We got a guy in Arizona who makes these things for us and does a great job. He puts them in a nice clamshell casing with the CD that is professionally labeled, and well, he's a professional, that's why we go there. But you got a recent speech of Sam Dixon's presentation, Why We Should Be Optimistic. Why should we be optimistic? Watch the video, and this is a video. It is not just an audio thing that you can listen to. You can hear it and see it. You'll see the magnificent Sam Dixon. You'll also see Kevin McDonald, Dr. McDonald. It's a twofer, Sam Dixon and Kevin McDonald. We are really chewing through our top five guys. That's why they're in the top five in number of appearances logged here, because we keep having them on, and for good reason. A couple of weeks ago, you heard from Sam Dixon in his most recent appearance. Last week, Kevin McDonald. Tonight, Jared Taylor, all amongst our top five most interviewed guests of all time. And so we think you'll like this DVD. And Kevin McDonald gives a speech. And you'll see Kevin McDonald like you've never seen him before, flanked with a beautiful Confederate flag in the background. And he's giving a heartfelt speech about confronting the power that oppresses us. And Sam Dixon's Why We Should Be Optimistic. So it's a DVD. You can watch it on your DVD or Blu-ray player, or just put it into your computer hard drive, and it'll pop right up on your computer screen if you contribute to our third quarter fundraising drive. And we hope that you do. We hope that you do return your contribution in the mail, and we will get that out to you right away, right away, and I mean within days. And we've got them all here in stock, and I'm looking at the box right now, and they're ready to go out. And we need your support to stay on the air. If you appreciate the message that we give you, we need you to help us to continue to deliver that message. And so I'm taking a segment out that would otherwise be used for more important things that we would rather be talking about, to fundraise, which I hate doing, but we have to do, and we have to stay on the air, or we're not going to be here, and the longest-running voice in pro-right media will be gone. I want to give another shout-out to Keith Alexander. This was a busy week for my family. My father had a birthday. My brother had a birthday, so we had a lot of family events going on. Received a request to appear on the Right Stuff Network and also Red Ice to talk about Memphis. I couldn't make those appearances this week, much to my chagrin, but Keith Alexander filled in more than admirably with Mike Enoch and Warren Baylog and Henrik Palmgren and Lana Lochtiff, talking about the situation in Memphis. He really knocked it out of the park. He really did quite well. So if you had a chance to watch those, or will watch those, be sure to check them out. Okay, let's take a break now that that's done, and let's get to Tim Murdoch next. Third hour, going back to Memphis. So, well, I'm here always, but he'll come to Memphis with me, talk about Tucker Carlson's coverage, and get Tim's take on it. Always, always an insightful commentator. Tim Murdoch's up next.